You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Jake Wood and William McNulty were Marine veterans who missed having a greater mission when, in 2009, there was that devastating earthquake in Haiti. They separately realized that they had extraordinary skills that could be put to use. With the blessing of their families, they made their way to Haiti and were able to provide immediate, though small-scale, relief to thousands of Haitians. From this initial effort grew Team Rubicon, a highly mobile first response disaster relief unit. And I'm very pleased to welcome William McNulty from Team Rubicon headquarters in Los Angeles, and Jake Wood, who is with Team Rubicon in Joplin, Missouri, to our show today. Hi.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Now, Jake, you were a scout sniper, and William, weren't you an infantryman and intelligence officer?
I worked for a living, Leonard. I was enlisted.
You were enlisted. Yeah, you enlisted, and you learned those skills in the Marines. How important were the skills that you gained in the Marines to your work on Team Rubicon? I mean, does a sniper know anything other than how to shoot a gun?
I think that's probably a common perception about snipers and what it is that they do. Scout snipers in the Marine Corps have a lot of skills outside of, take precision shots. They're very used to operating in austere environments. They know how to take control in chaotic situations, but also they simply know how to keep a cool head on their shoulders when everybody else seems to be losing theirs.
Now, are the things that you saw in Afghanistan and Iraq at all similar to the disaster that you saw with the earthquake in Haiti?
There were a lot of similarities. The sights and sounds and smells were all very similar, but probably the most similar aspect of it was simply the chaos that inevitably ensues when government and structure breaks down. People tend to kind of lose their heads, and that's when these natural human instincts of survival kick in for the local populace, and that's really when things kind of get dangerous.
William, how did the two of you meet?
The two of us actually met initially through a friend, Matt Burden from Black5.net, and then we became Facebook friends. We actually never actually first met each other in person until we arrived in the Dominican Republic.
Uh-huh. And that you had to go to the Dominican Republic to get to Haiti at that point?
We did. At the time that we decided to deploy, the Haiti airfield in Port-au-Prince was closed. And so we had to fly into the Dominican Republic and travel overland into Port-au-Prince.
Now, I asked Jake how he applied his experience as a scout sniper to the disaster in Haiti. What about you? You were an intelligence officer?
I was an intelligence specialist, and I was also a tow gunner initially when I joined the Marines. But, every Marine learns first aid, combat life-saving skills. And what we're doing is taking these skills and other skills that we've learned in the military and now adapting them to disaster response.
Were you both bored with civilian life? Is that one of the reasons you got involved in this?
Go ahead, Jake. I wouldn't say that I was necessarily bored. I was a newly minted civilian when we decided to go to Haiti. I'd only been out of the Marine Corps for about 3 or 4 months. I simply saw that there was an opportunity to help and, decided that really the only option at that point in time was to go and help.
And William?
At that point in time, my career in the intelligence community was coming to an end. I was looking for something else to parlay my experience into. And it's just amazing how such a natural fit it was to apply the skills that, that I learned in the military now to disaster relief.
Now, Jake, didn't every relief organization immediately descend on Joplin? What's Team Rubicon doing there? And what are you doing that FEMA and the Red Cross aren't doing?
Well, really, we've plugged ourselves into the entire response machine. This is a city right now that's pretty overwhelmed with the situation that they find themselves in. And so having people, physically capable people, that know how to operate on their own and don't need to have their hands held is an incredible asset to the response. Primarily what we're doing is going through the different neighborhoods that have some opportunity to be reoccupied. And what I mean by that is the vast majority of the devastation here is simply going to be razed to the ground with bulldozers. There's just no possibility for any of the residents to come in and reclaim their homes. But on the outskirts, there are some homes that there is a chance that these people are going to be able to come back in and reoccupy. And so our priority right now is identifying those homes and then helping those people to clear the debris that might be blocking their driveways or the roads, that might be coming through their roofs, and then helping them patch those roofs up so that these are actually habitable homes for them. What actually our team is doing right now is just to the east of Joplin, there's a small town called Duquesne. And Duquesne only had a brief search and rescue effort go through, whereas the town of Joplin had about five or six passes with the Kansas City search and rescue team. So right now, Team Rubicon, about 15 of us, are doing a step-by-step grid search in the city of Duquesne in through one neighborhood that was just completely leveled, hoping that we can bring down the number of people still listed as missing. I think the last reports I heard, there was about 250 people that were yet to be recovered.
And do local people join in your efforts?
Yes. Well, right now, actually, what we're doing is we're trying to organize a group of AmeriCorps volunteers. These are, you know, some good-natured, good-hearted people that are out here trying to lend a hand, but really have no experience within this kind of destruction, and certainly probably have no experience around dead bodies. And so we're trying to kind of serve as a and from an organizational standpoint, we're trying to prepare them for what they're going to see and then also walk them through this process as we're going through and doing this search effort.
Are you concerned that there'll be other tornadoes? How do you plan for weather in disaster relief?
Well, luckily there's a lot of people that are a lot smarter than us that are keeping track of the weather patterns. Joplin only had 24 minutes warning, they say, prior to the tornado hitting, but they certainly knew that tornadoes were possible within the storm system that was approaching. So we're well aware of what the atmospheric conditions are around us, and it's certainly something that we're taking seriously. The first night that we were down here, we actually had to seek shelter because there were tornadoes touching down in the county that we were in.
Now, William, how does Team Rubicon fit into the larger picture of disaster relief in situations like this?
Sure. Well, we've defined ourselves pretty specifically. We bridge that critical time gap between catastrophe and conventional aid response. So we are a first response capable international disaster relief organization. So
what did that mean in Joplin? Did that mean that, well, you couldn't fly into the Dominican Republic there? How close could you get?
Well, you know, Joplin was actually, even though Joplin was pretty close to two large urban centers, being Kansas City and Springfield. So It's actually really easy to get aid into Joplin, whereas in Tuscaloosa, it was a little more difficult because it wasn't so close to a large city. Now, what that means for Team Rubicon in Joplin is we were there on the ground within 12 hours. We had an advanced team, a two-man recon team on the ground doing an initial assessment. They plugged themselves in with the local civ military authorities, and that's we decided to deploy a team shortly thereafter.
And then there in comes FEMA and established NGOs. Are you in competition, or is there some way that you can all wind up working in cooperation, taking different roles?
Never in competition.
We're absolutely not in competition.
I'm sorry to hear that. It makes for a lot more drama in a conversation like this.
Well, you know, the first thing that we do is we plugged into the Emergency Operations Center, the EOC here, and just found out from them what it was that they needed, and told them exactly what capabilities we brought, and then we simply asked them, because they're the professionals, we said, where can we have, the most impact for you? And they they told us, and we just immediately got to work, and we told them, hey, you don't have to check in on us. We can take care of ourselves, and we'll let you know, exactly what it is we find and the progress we make. We're not here to be a drag or a burden on anybody. We're here to try to make the process better.
Is the team and
job...
go ahead.
What we are trying to do, though, is show that there's this niche that we can fill with small medical response teams around the world, and that niche is that time gap between the catastrophe and how long it takes for the larger aid organizations to establish their logistical machine, because they are bureaucracy and they do move slower.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fill that niche, that time gap, that interim with these small medical teams. And that's really what we're trying to tell people, that is our main capability at Team Rubicon.
So you can mobilize very quickly. How quickly in the case of something like Joplin or Tuscaloosa?
Well, like I said, with Joplin, we had a team on the ground within 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
In Tuscaloosa, we had an initial team on the ground very shortly thereafter, too, and the main body was there within a few days. Haiti, for instance, when we arrived in Haiti, we didn't see anyone else for the first 2 days.
But you weren't even an organization then. When did you decide to become Team Rubicon?
Well, we gave ourselves the name Team Rubicon actually before we went down to Haiti, because as the effort started to pick up steam and we started to gather volunteers, Jake and I decided that we should probably give it a name.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually gave the name Team Rubicon before we went down. However, we didn't form ourselves as a 501c3 until after we returned from Haiti, 18 days later.
Is the team in Joplin made up of mostly Marine veterans?
We're made up of veterans from all services with all sorts of experiences from a whole lot of different wars. But we're also the other important half of Team Rubicon are the medical professionals that we partner with. You know, these are doctors, these are paramedics, nurses, people that bring, very, very specific medical skills to the organization that aren't always found in the military. Often they are, but not always. And so we certainly augment what we're doing with these civilian medical professionals.
The doctors who are called to give medical assistance on planes are protected by Good Samaritan laws to a certain extent. Are you protected?
Every state has a different Good Samaritan law. That's why we actually don't respond within the U.S. Or domestically in a medical capacity. Internationally, that's really hasn't been an issue. However, we are looking into partnerships with the Medical Reserve Corps, which is a federal organization which does provide that blanket liability coverage for medical responders.
Now, where you mentioned internationally, where else have you been?
We've deployed to Chile, the large earthquake, about a month after the Haiti earthquake. We sent a team there that did medical reconnaissance for the Chilean military north and south of the epicenter in Constitución. We did triage and treatment and transport operations. We call them T3 operations there. After Chile, we deployed to Burma, the Thai-Burma border, where we conducted a training clinic with Karen refugee medics, trying to bring their clinics up to WHO standards.
Mm-hmm.
After
that's
Burma,
that's a
deployed.
Civil war in Burma. They are fighting against the government.
Right. These people are being displaced, systematically displaced by the Burmese military junta. After Burma, we deployed to Pakistan, where we worked with the Pakistan Medical Association. We deployed the day after the Taliban issued the threat to foreign aid workers. After Pakistan, we deployed to Haiti again, this time for the cholera mission in partnership with the International Medical Corps. We helped establish oral rehydration points around Port-au-Prince to fight cholera. And after Haiti, we deployed to Sudan. In Sudan, one of our doctors had brokered a peace deal between two warring tribes. We delivered on that peace deal, establishing two medical clinics for these tribes, and there is now a transfer of services between the physicians of the tribes to force them to work together to come up with a truly indigenous solution.
So is this
your
new...
go ahead. Since then, we have done these two domestic missions, in first in Tuscaloosa and now in Joplin, where Jake is right now.
So this is your new profession? Is it possible to make a living out of disaster relief?
Well, you know, Jake and I have been doing this now for 18 months, and we haven't taken a paycheck. We're starting to establish a way for us to get paid through grants. But what we have pledged to our donors on our website is if you donate on our website, your money goes straight to the field, not to overhead.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us to talk about this on this year that's on track to be the deadliest season for tornadoes in the nation's history. So you probably have a lot more work that you're going to have to be doing here and in dangerous places like Pakistan. What's your website?
Our website is teamrubiconusa.org, and you can find out all the information right there. People that are interested can donate right through the website and follow along on our blog as we're updating it in real time here from Joplin.
And .org means you're a nonprofit.
Correct. We are a 501c3 nonprofit.
Thank you both so much for talking with us. I've been speaking to the two founders of Team Rubicon, Jake Wood and William McNulty. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Leonard. Thanks for having
Leonard.